A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. Proverbs 13:22. Hi, I'm Rob West. That verse seems pretty straightforward, and yet it leaves several questions unanswered. Exactly what should we leave to our kids? How much and when? Ron Blue joins us today with the answers. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, our guest, financial teacher and author Ron Blue, literally wrote the book on this important topic. It's called Splitting Heirs, Giving Your Money and Things to Your Children Without Ruining Their Lives. That pretty much says it all. And by the way, if you haven't read the book and you're thinking about this idea of wealth transfer, it's a must read. Ron, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Rob, as always.
Ron, we've had calls from folks who even take out insurance policies just so they can leave something to their children, who in many cases are already grown up and out of the house. Does Proverbs 13:22 mean we should always leave money to our children and grandchildren?
I don't interpret it that way, Rob. I think leaving money to my children and or grandchildren in many cases may be a bad idea. And I don't take this as a command. I take this as a principle. When that was written, there were no charitable organizations. So wealth stayed within the family typically. And what it's saying is when you accumulate wealth and you've done a good job at that, your grandchildren are going to end up with it, which is true. But it doesn't mean that I'm commanded to build wealth for my grandchildren at all. I don't interpret it that way at all.
Yeah. A spiritual inheritance? Absolutely, but not necessarily a financial inheritance. So, Ron, when are the times that we shouldn't leave money to our kids?
Well, I always tell people that if you believe that God owns it all, then the last decision you make as a steward is who gets his resources. So I think that if you leave financial resources to heirs that you know will waste it or use it in a ungodly way, I would have serious question as to whether you should leave that money to them. And so I counsel people that if you haven't left wisdom to your children and grandchildren, don't leave them money, because money never creates wisdom, but wisdom creates money. So wisdom first, money second is my counsel.
That's powerful. Ron, you've always been a great question asker. What's a question we can ask ourselves when we're contemplating this decision on leaving money to kids?
Well, I think the first question that both Judy and I, that Judy and I dealt with, and we spent 2 years answering the question of how we were going to leave wealth. And the question was, if we left, pick a number, 50,000, 100,000, a million, whatever the number is, to and name the child, what's the worst thing that can happen? And in our particular case with five children, we had five different answers to that question. But that's the right question to ask. And then you've got to answer, okay, if that's the worst thing that's going to happen, how likely is it to happen? And what are the consequences of it? So we had one child we knew if we left money to them, they'd give it away. Well, that's not a bad consequence. But we had another son-in-law that if we had left money to that couple, it would have destroyed his need to provide for his family. That was a bad consequence. So answering that question, what's the worst thing that can happen, is a way to ask a really good question about wealth transfer.
Well, and that also means, Ron, that it's okay that we don't treat all of our heirs equally, right?
Every time I've been speaking, Rob, I share this principle, and I always get a lot of comment, and that is, if you love your children equally, you'll treat them uniquely, because they're unique individuals. And if you think about it, God loves all of us equally, but he doesn't treat us equally in terms of money and possessions and so forth. He's not punishing us. He's just saying that he knows what's best for us. So I think as a parent, I need to think, I love my children equally, and come back to that question, well, am I helping them or hurting them by leaving wealth to them? Or am I using God's resources in a way that I know will be wasted. That's not a good decision.
That's powerful. Ron, that was really well said and great insights. Thanks for stopping by.
Well, thank you for having me, Rob. Always a pleasure.
We'll be back with much more just around the corner. Stay with us.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Across human history, firstborns are often given a special status. In biblical times, they were given responsibilities over the home. They had claim to the family inheritance. The firstborn was typically someone for younger siblings to look up to and admire. And as Scripture portrays him, Jesus plays that role. Paul writes in Colossians 1:18 that Jesus is the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. The firstborn from the dead means that Jesus is the first member of the new creation, and by faith we inherit the new creation as well, following after him, and we also will be united with him and reign with him forever. Grow in your walk with Christ. Visit getanchor.com.
We are grateful for support from the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing. ECFI is an educational initiative of Eventide Asset Management that seeks to help Christians understand and practice biblically faithful investing. They do this through their podcast and online journal featuring articles from industry thought leaders and their course called Discover God's Story for Investing. More information is available at faithandinvesting.com. That's faithandinvesting.com.
Hello, I'm Don Hawkins, here to tell you about Encouragement Live, 55 minutes of industrial strength radio encouragement featuring resourceful guests plus practical biblical insights to help you face life's challenges. We'll be taking your phone calls, so plan to join us for Encouragement Live, Saturdays at 7:05 p.m. Central, 8:05 p.m. Eastern, here on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. All right, in just a moment, we're going to begin taking your phone calls today, your questions on anything financial. You can call right now. We'd love to hear from you. 800-525-7000. Again, that number is 800-525-7000. Now, whatever financial topic is on your mind today, let's dive into it. We'll tackle it together. We'll always do that in a way that's encouraging and hopeful, but rooted in God's Word. Again, that number, 800-525-7000. Grateful to have Ron Blue here today. Ron, during our opening segment, took us back to, I think, a principle that we need to always be thinking about. We touched on it a bit yesterday as well on the broadcast, and that is that we need to be considering whether the next steward is chosen and prepared. And he mentioned one of the principles that he uses in addition to do your giving while you're living so you're knowing where it's going, which is one of my favorites. He shared the other principle that he talks about often in this area, which is if you love your kids equally, you will treat them uniquely. Now, a lot of people struggle with that. Wait a minute, how in the world could I not just split the money equally among my kids, whatever portion I've decided to leave to my heirs? And you certainly can do that. What Ron is saying here is that, you know, as you evaluate their needs and as the steward of this money, you may decide to give differing amounts. You know, he had a daughter who at the time, he was considering his wealth transfer plan with Judy, his wife. Initially, she was a single mom and a school teacher, and she had more needs than maybe his son, who was an attorney. So, you know, you look at that and you evaluate and you exercise discernment about the trajectory of their lives, not just their financial status, and then you make that decision. But I think, you know, the verse we started with is often misunderstood. It's this passage from Proverbs 13:22. You will know it well. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. My friend Michael Blue, who happens to be Ron's son, who's a writer and is an attorney, but also has been to seminary, he's spent quite a bit of time unpacking some verses that he believes are misunderstood related to money, and he believes that this is one of those. And here's his thought, is that, you know, it seems simple enough on face value that inheritance, a financial inheritance, is a thing that good people leave. And the verse is even used, and we hear this from callers periodically, to affirm our pursuit of accumulating enough wealth to not only leave an inheritance to our families, but even in some cases to buy life insurance as a means of making sure we leave an inheritance to our families in light of this passage. But Michael makes the point, and I think it's well said, that, you know, if we dig into this verse a bit deeper, we may see that that's an incorrect understanding of the verse. So let's look at it this way. You know, first, if it's a proverb, then it's supposed to be a general truth, a general statement of truth. So we have to ask, what is that general truth that it's communicating? And we can ask some questions around that idea to determine that. Number one, what kind of inheritance is it talking about? What kind of inheritance is lasting? What does it mean to be a, quote, good man, which is referenced in this? What makes this person good, the leaving of the inheritance, or is there something about his goodness that compels him to leave this type of inheritance? And then, is the reverse of this true? Are people who don't leave inheritances bad people? Well, based on these questions, I think it does become clear that we need to do a little bit more digging to understand the general truth this verse is stating. And I think the first place we have to look is in the verses immediately surrounding the verse in question that we're talking about. You know, verses in Proverbs are regularly coupled together with other verses to express a broader truth. So here, this verse is a part of a group of verses contrasting the righteous and the unrighteous. Well, this helps us to understand that the good man spoken of is good because he is righteous. As such, we can then ask what kind of inheritance a righteous person in Israel during this time would be able to leave to his family. Remember, this verse was written to mostly poor farmers living in a land-based agrarian society. Well, the one thing that every righteous person could pass along to his family would be wisdom. He did this by teaching his family how to worship the giver of the land, Yahweh, and how to honor him by not squandering the land through laziness or unrighteousness. If this good and righteous man did this, well, his descendants would generally be able to hold on to the land of their fathers through righteousness, diligence, and character. And this was the way of inheritance that was, and I believe is still, generally advisable to every righteous person. This is the type of inheritance that every good and righteous person can pass along to their family, whether that person lives in North Korea or North America now or 1,000 years from now. They can pass on the right picture of worship and righteousness and character, which results in an inheritance that is lasting and worthwhile for generations to come. Second, I think once we feel as if we've determined what we think the general statement of truth represented in this verse is, we have to look at the rest of the book of Proverbs, the other wisdom books, if you will, and the rest of the Bible to see if we have a proper understanding of the verse. And I think we see several things. Ecclesiastes makes it clear that toiling to leave wealth is another vanity, that New Testament is full of warnings about the dangers of wealth. We see that Proverbs says in other places that other things are far superior to wealth. And so when we put all of that together, I think, you know, we can see this as teaching people to pursue leaving generational wealth so they can be good people seems rather inconsistent with the whole counsel of Scripture. So perhaps the proper understanding here is that the good and righteous person ought to instill character and righteousness in their children, which will be passed on for generations and will be an inheritance that draws them to God. Now, there is no doubt it's a blessing that if you leave financial means to your heirs, if they're prepared for it, that's a good thing. But I think we need to recognize that at face value, this may be communicating a broader truth, and perhaps that spiritual capital that we talked about on yesterday's broadcast is superior. I would submit that it absolutely is. It's the far greater legacy that we will leave to our kids, that spiritual inheritance that we pass on. And then if done in the context of a values transfer and a faith transfer and a character transfer, then the financial transfer, that financial inheritance that's left, becomes a blessing because it's done in the context of an heir, a next steward that is prepared spiritually and from a character and values standpoint and financially to be able leave that money and know that it's going to be a blessing to them at the end of the day. Now, you won't be able to control that, but at least as the steward today, you're doing everything you can to prepare that next steward for the handling of the wealth. And Lord willing, it will be received in such a way that it doesn't become a stumbling block. It doesn't become a burden to them. It's actually a great blessing to propel their life even further. Perhaps it's the fuel that drives them toward what God is doing in their lives. And then, wow, it's a powerful thing. And, you know, that's the big idea of money that we talk about on this broadcast every day, which is this idea that money is a good creation from God. Remember, God's word doesn't say money is the root of all evil. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. So money is a good creation from God to provide and to give and to invest for human flourishing and to spread the gospel, so long as it doesn't become the object of our affection, and so long as when we're passing it on to the next generation, they're ready to receive it. Hey, I hope that's caused you to think a little deeper about this passage and this bigger idea of wealth transfer. We're going to take your questions in the next segment right around the corner. Stay with us.
This weekend on The Stand Radio, we'll talk about the music of Taylor Swift and ways we can have thoughtful conversations about it with our kids. Dr. Jessica Peck joins us.
Now, her music has been getting more sophisticated, more worldly, and really those catchy, uplifting tunes of her early years from albums like Fearless and Speak Now are gone.
The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
The Bachelor of Arts in Christian Ministry at Wesley Biblical Seminary is the perfect opportunity to prepare for God's calling on your life. It's easy to make excuses why you can't pursue what God has called you to do, but this program removes those barriers. Flexible class options, an affordable cost, and highly trusted professors. WBS is the school for you, and now is the time to take a next step and prepare for God's calling on your life. Learn more at wbs.edu. That's wbs.edu.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
If you believe in the work of the American Family Association and you want to ensure that it continues for generations, consider including a gift in your will or trust. It's one of the most popular and effective ways to give. You'd simply connect with one of your advisors who would help you include language in your will or trust to include a specific gift to the American Family Association. If you'd like to learn more or connect with an advisor who can help you with that, just go to afafoundation.net.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. My name is Rob West. I'm your host, and we're thrilled you're along with us today. We want to help you answer the questions you have around financial stewardship today, and we've got two lines open, 800-525-7000. You can call right now. Let's begin today in Texas. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I really appreciate the financial advice, but also appreciate the biblical wisdom you apply to these situations. So
thank you
very much.
I appreciate that.
So my dilemma is this. I've been working with a primary advisor. It's been very helpful over the years, but I got a second advisor that came along. The second advisor suggested that if I'm going to retire in a couple of years, I would defer my Social Security until 67, and then start it at that point. The other advisor, which I've been working for longer, said, no, what you want to do is take your Social Security right away because you don't want to start reducing your 401 principal, which, you know, if you did it for 2 years at a $70,000 per year budget, you'd be basically taking away $140,000 of your 401 plan when you could be basically taking that money directly from Social Security instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. So what is the balance in your 401k roughly?
A little over $1 million.
Okay. So call it 1.1 maybe.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And what do you need to pull per year if you don't take Social Security?
70K roughly.
70K. Okay. Yeah. And so what he's saying is you'd take, you'd have to take 140 of that, which, you know, normally we would say, let's try to limit that to, 8% or 4% a year. It sounds like you'd be taking, more like 7% a year, maybe a little less than that, 6.5%, just for 2 years though. And then based on the Social Security you'd receive, so 2 years would get you to full retirement age. Is that right?
Well, I'm actually getting to 67, so
okay, yeah.
Basically it would be a difference of about 500 a month. So what I did is I took the 140 and divided it by 500 a month, came out to like 24 years, right? So I was thinking, well, maybe it is better to take the money, to take Social Security now, when I retire versus waiting the 2 years.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So I think the question is, now, if you get there, you said you get an extra 500 a month. How has that portfolio been doing? What is it invested in?
It's diversified, and it's in different accounts. So I'd say it's pretty much overall balanced. So it's pulling in maybe like depending upon the year, 6 to 8% a year. It's been doing. He's forecasting that it's going to be less, in the next 10 years. But
okay. Yeah, very good.
Roughly 6%, yeah.
Okay, and then what would you need to pull out of it once you start collecting Social Security if you do wait and get the full retirement benefit 2 years from now?
I would probably be maybe 4K a year out of the 401 to get to the $4K per month to get to the, the 70, just planning the budget for 70K a year.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Well, you know, here's the reality is, I mean, we don't want to try to predict where the market's going from here. That's a losing proposition. But what we do know is that the market is very high right now. We know that the economy is slowing. There is a question as to where the, you know, whether the Fed is going to be able to engineer this soft landing or we're going to slip into a recession. I think, you know, the reality is we know we're going to get that guaranteed increase of 8% a year on the Social Security. And so given that we're just talking about 24 months, I kind of like the idea of locking in that higher check for the rest of your life, even though it does require for you to take a little bit more. I mean, even if you started taking Social Security right now, you would still be pulling something from the 401k. So it's really just the difference, which is about, it sounds like about half of what you'd be pulling out, you'd have to take anyway. So we're talking about taking an extra maybe 70K total, 35,000 a year is what I'm guessing. And you know, in exchange for being able to get that guaranteed increase of 8% and an extra $500 a month for the rest of your life. And if you're in good health and longevity is on your side, obviously none of us know the day or the hour the Lord is going to call us home. But I think this idea that, you know, with the prospect of a recession, we're, you know, up here at a pretty high watermark, we've got, you know, low taxes right now, and there's uncertainty about, you know, what's going to happen with the election and whether or not the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act will in fact expire into the end of 2025 or whether we'll stay here. You know, I think all of that for me says, let's go ahead and hold off on Social Security and take that higher amount, because it's not like, you know, you'd be able to eliminate it completely. You're still going to be pulling a good bit about out every year starting right away, even if you take the Social Security check. So I would probably, although I, you know, I could go either way. I mean, you know, because there are some unknowns and we're going to have to just kind of make a decision on this. I kind of like the idea of, you know, recognizing we've had good growth in the 401k, let's go ahead and start pulling from that and let the Social Security continue to grow, not necessarily to age 70, but at least until that full retirement age benefit.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Appreciate that. And right. I also wanted to thank you for your tip about the National Christian Foundation for a way of giving.
Yes.
That's been fantastic, especially with the market going up recently. I was able to give more to charities as a result of that.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm thrilled to hear that, Glenn. Yeah, NCF, founded by Larry Burkett and Ron Blue and Terry Parker back in the 80s, has just been incredible and doing some great work. So thanks for mentioning that. God bless you, Glenn. All the best to you in this next season of life. And I'm sure God has a lot in store for you. Well, folks, we've still got a lot more to go. Mark, John, Tim, we'll be coming your way right after the break. I appreciate you all calling, but we do have to hit this break here, and I want to be sure to give you plenty of time. Hey, before we head to this break, let me mention, folks, if you're struggling to stay on budget and maybe trying to figure out how do you balance everything, it was working 4 years ago, but now with everything 25% higher, it's not working quite as well. Well, that spending plan is essential for you to be able to stay on track and make sure that the way you're handling God's money truly reflects what's most important to you. The FaithFi app could be just what you need to get your budget set up, but also to manage it well and stay on budget every month. So check it out today. You'll just head to our website, faithfi.com, click app. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Did you know the average person walks nearly 2,000 miles a year? Now think about the millions of children around the world who risk disease and miss out on opportunities simply because they walk those 2,000 miles without a decent pair of shoes. Around the world, Buckner Shoes for Orphan Souls provides access to health, education, hope, and opportunity through the gift of shoes. Visit giveshoestoday.org and find out how you can provide shoes for a child right now.
Jerusalem, oh Jerusalem, how many times I would have taken you under my wings. They had everything that was necessary for them to know Jesus and follow him, and they went their way.
I think for nations, for individuals, there is a day that you have to make the decision to respond to the Lord, and it might be that the door of opportunity after that shuts.
Exploring the Word, weekdays, 3 p.m. Central on AFR.
Paying too much for health insurance? Frustrated by high deductibles and increasing premiums? There's a better way. Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM is a Christian community delivering a faith-based solution to the high costs of healthcare. Take control over your healthcare costs with a program from CHM that could save you up to 40%. Learn more and enroll today at chministries.org/faithfi. That's chministries.org/faithfi.
Have you downloaded the FaithFi app yet? You need to do that today because this is going to make your life easier. Yes, you can manage your money through the in-app envelope feature, but also plan out future goals. I want to buy a house in 5 years, and I'm on track to do that. Here's also what I like. You can connect with people around the country. It's like social media, but better. Ask a question, get an answer, and share what you're learning about money and investing. So why don't you grab your phone right now and download the FaithFi app?
Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net.
We are grateful for support from the Eventide Center for Faith and Investing. ECFI is an educational initiative of Eventide Asset Management that seeks to help Christians understand and practice biblically faithful investing. They do this through their podcast and online journal featuring articles from industry thought leaders and their course called Discover God's Story for Investing. More information is available at faithandinvesting.com. That's faithandinvesting.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today on anything financial. Let's head back to the phones. We'll go to Ohio. Welcome, Mark, to the broadcast. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great, thanks.
Good. My question is an income property that I have, whether, you know, is it better to hang on to this during retirement or sell it? My concern is the capital gains that are probably going to be incurred when you sell it.
Yeah. So you've got, is this a residential property or is it commercial real estate?
It's a commercial.
Okay. And are you just kind of wanting to get out of the business of being a commercial landlord, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, that's the intent. You know, at some point I'm going to want to just kind of hand those responsibilities off to somebody else. And, but, you know, the concern is the capital gains bite, you know, after you've owned it for 20 some years, it's been depreciated. So is there any way to, you know, mitigate some of that?
Yeah, there really isn't. I mean, I think that the good news is that taxes are symptomatic of provision. So you don't have to make money if you don't have a profit. But I realize, you know, it does eat away at what's available. And if it's throwing off cash right now, good cash flow, because you've got, you know, it fully occupied or close to it. And, you know, you've got low debt, you know, you're giving up that cash flow, and then you're going to have to redeploy that after tax proceed and try to at least match that, and hopefully with less overhead and involvement from you, maybe a more passive investment opportunity. I mean, really the only way, Mark, to you know, help with that tax bite would be, number one, to kind of stay in the real estate business and just push that forward into another similar property through a 1031 exchange. But that doesn't solve for your goal of, you know, getting out of being a landlord. The other is, if you wanted to do some charitable giving now or in the future, or replace other giving you were doing after or through after tax giving, then you could give a portion of the property to a donor advised fund. You wouldn't have to give the whole thing. You could give a percentage of it to a donor advised fund. And then when it's sold, that portion would, the cash portion of the proceeds of the sale, equal to the percentage you gave to your donor advised fund, would go in to the giving fund, and that portion would not be subject to capital gains tax. And then you could give that away. And so perhaps, you know, you do several years worth of giving. If you didn't want to do any more giving than you're already doing, you could do several years of the giving you were planning to do, but do it out of that portion of the property that's given to a donor advised fund. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's yeah, one option to kind of bring it down, but that it is, it's somewhere, I guess you have to pay for all that depreciation.
Yes. Yeah. No question about it. So I think, you know, perhaps, I mean, do you have a CPA that you could kind of crank through those numbers with and just figure out, okay, what would my after-tax proceeds be after I sell it? And then I think the next question is, okay, what am I going to do with it? And if I'm looking to exit, you know, the real estate business, at least in an active way, then you could compare kind of what you could generate through a more passive investment, let's say a properly diversified stock and bond portfolio or something like that, you know, to what you're receiving right now in the way of cash flow from this property, which hopefully is appreciating, although commercial real estate isn't doing quite as well as residential. And then just at least compare financially, how would I do now and in the future, you know, by redirecting the after-tax proceeds versus just hanging onto this property. And the other option is you leave it right where it is and just hire a property manager and, you know, kind of get yourself out of some of the day-to-day if that's the burden you're trying to alleviate. But, you know, apart from that, there really isn't any other tax mitigation opportunities.
Okay. Well, all right. Thank you very much for your input and enjoy the show.
All right. Thanks, John. Mark. Thanks for being on the program very much. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. Again, that's 800-525-7000. Let's go to Iowa. Hi, John. How can I help?
Well, first off, Rob, thank you for your ministry. I appreciate that. I was wondering if you've ever considered classic cars, for an example, as a viable option for possibly a small part of a retirement portfolio, factoring in, of course, you know, having to insure them, shelter them, and maintain them during the course of ownership, of course, you know.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. You know, the only challenge, and I'm not necessarily the guy to ask on this just because this is not an area of expertise for me. I mean, I think that generally the challenge with collectibles is, you know, they're subject to trends and varying demand. And so, you know, with that, they obviously can lose value. On the other hand, they're not making any more of them. And so, you know, many, as you probably know far better than I do, many makes and models do hold value and, in fact, increase over time. But you have to know what cars are likely to appreciate. And then obviously you mentioned this, but you've got to factor in the storage and the maintenance, obviously, even if you're not driving them, because things like gaskets and hoses and wires age over time and need replacement. So I guess, you know, maybe the big picture is just think about your overall investable assets and think about what portion is appropriate, so you're not too highly concentrated in something that, you know, is a little bit more non-traditional in terms of both its ability to generate income, its liquidity, you know, it doesn't have maintenance associated with it and maybe doesn't have as wide a fluctuation in the appreciation or depreciation of the asset. And so I think, you know, if you said, well, of my total assets, this is, let's say, 10%. Yeah. I mean, I think that could make some sense. You might enjoy it. And so there's a non-financial element to this. And you obviously, you know, if you have some know-how and expertise in this area, that goes a long way. But maybe those are just some general thoughts. I don't know if that helps or not.
Yeah, and I do have a lot of that stuff covered. I have considerable experience at this throughout my whole life. And, you know, I would say your 10% is right on, I guess, where I'm at right now, you know, as far as the market values go. So I guess I'm good there. I also think there may be some, you know, tax-free benefits to some of those sales, which is also a bonus, which obviously would give you more money to give.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you just need to look at it objectively and just say, you know, am I running a hobby here, or is this truly an investment, or is it a little bit of both? And there's nothing wrong with it being a little bit of both or purely a hobby. I think the question is just, you know, if it's truly an investment that you're looking for, then by definition, you know, we would sell it when it accomplishes its purpose or when we can, you know, do better somewhere else. And obviously there's a non-financial element, which is just just your enjoyment and as an enthusiast and somebody who's kind of having some fun, you know, with things like that. And again, there's nothing wrong with that, just as long as, you know, you understand what is my ultimate objective here. So I love it. I mean, I think you're not too highly concentrated or overweighted here. You obviously are skilled in this area, so I don't have any issue with this whatsoever. But John, thanks for raising it. It's a great question, one we don't talk about a whole lot here on the broadcast, so I appreciate you bringing it up. Well, we're headed toward our next break here, back with our final segment. We'll be taking some additional calls here just around the corner. I know Tim in Ohio and Patty's been waiting patiently there in Virginia, and then we'll try to get up to Minnie in Ohio. I may have room for one more question before we round out the broadcast. That number, 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Our vision, that every Christian would see God as their ultimate treasure. Everything we do here at FaithFi is toward that objective, and I trust we're helping you do that here today. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ, that is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
You look at three of the four justices there in Colorado that voted to remove him from the ballot. They all came from Ivy League schools, schools that had been created as divinity schools. What a picture of the apostasy in America when it comes to the church.
Stay informed with Tony Perkins and his guests on Washington Watch, weekdays at 4 p.m. Central on AFR, or catch up anytime with the podcast at AFR.net.
What's most important to you when it comes to choosing your financial advisor? Someone who's aligned with your biblical values? How about someone who will take the time to explain your options? Certified Kingdom Advisors are professionals who meet high standards in competence and integrity and have been trained to offer biblical financial advice. To find a Certified Kingdom Advisor in your area, visit faithfi.com and click Find a CKA.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Are you unsure if your investments align with your values? Well, for nearly three decades, the goal of the Timothy Plan has been to guide clients on a biblically responsible journey with its mutual funds and ETFs. More information is available at timothyplan.com. Investing includes risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider funds, investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services LLC.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Here on a Friday, we always look forward to having Jerry Boyer stop by. Jerry's our resident economist, and Jerry fills us in on the market. We'll also share a win from this week, as Jerry's working heavily in the area of corporate engagement. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, Jerry, a worldwide IT outage today, huh? You've been reading up on this?
I have, and I shouldn't laugh. I mean, it's really disrupted people's lives here, but it appears that a cybersecurity software update triggered the problem. So that's a real reminder of human fallibility. Here, we fixed the software so there won't be outages. Here's the update. Oh, here's a bunch of outages.
I was just texting. I'm sorry. I was just texting with my son, who's in Bangkok at the moment, on his way back from Thailand on a mission trip, and he said it's a mess there. I guess airlines are being affected by this, along with financial services and a whole host of others.
Yeah, we're highly dependent on this, and this is something George Gilder has been warning about for some time, that the complexity of cyber attacks, the way we do the internet now, might not be sustainable for the long run, because the cyber attackers are getting more sophisticated, arguably sometimes more sophisticated than people who are writing defenses. Mm. There is a shortage of people who are writing cybersecurity software. You don't have enough of those people, you know, because the pay scale is not the same as the pay scale for, when you hack somebody and steal, you know, right, hundreds of millions of dollars. It kind of pays to be a thief in some ways, not morally, not in God's eyes, but it might financially. And that there probably is a need for restructuring of the way we do this, something more towards a blockchain methodology rather than the traditional internet methodology, because the more fixes we do, the more vulnerabilities there are. And this is kind of a race between the bad guys and the good guys, and it's not clear that the good guys are winning.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, it's interesting. We'll keep an eye on that for sure. Jerry, let's talk for a second about the markets. Obviously been a lot of strength as of late, even though we're starting the trading day slower today. I guess largely because of where things are headed, at least politically, in terms of who, with the prospect of Trump winning the presidential election and the economic philosophy and policies behind that, on top of pretty much 100% expectation of rate cuts here. But one interesting thing is it seems that in the last month or so in particular, we've seen a good bit of expansion in the breadth of the stock market gains, moving beyond just the high-flying tech sector. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I think there is a Trump trade going on. I think that's, there's always a bunch of things going on. And there's always a central bank trade. That's always part of it. And there, I think there is a Trump trade. And I think it's generally positive. Although I just read a Wall Street Journal article that said the Trump trade is that Trump will do tariffs and that will be inflationary. Yeah. And so then the central bank will try to slow down the economy in order to fight that. That feels like a little bit of a stretch to me. First of all, I think a lot of the tariff talk is a little bit empty. Trump talked a lot about a trade war when he ran for office the first time. And then he came in and we had a pretty mild trade war, and basically the trade patterns did not change in any appreciable way. So I know there's Trump champions like, hey, beat China in the trade war. And then, the Trump haters are, we did a trade war and it was terrible. And my answer is we had it was more of a play of a trade war. And didn't really have much effect one way or another. It was political theater. By the way, I don't want one. I think it's a mistake. I believe in free markets, and the nationalist agenda concerns me. This idea of tariffs, it's presented as though we're going to raise trade taxes because we're going to side with Americans against foreigners. But that's not what really happens in a trade war. What really happens is you are siding with some Americans against other Americans, right? There are some industries that import, and there are some industries that export. And there's always been this split in America over trade wars. Manufacturers want trade protection, but farmers don't, because we're food exporters. So what really happens is we tariff China on manufacturing goods, and then they tariff us on pork and soybeans. Yeah. So in the end, we're deciding which American sector to side with against the other. That's not the way to do it. So I really believe that we need more trade, not less trade. And I think, that's part of the providence of God. The more we trade with one another, the less likely we are to war with one another. Yes, deindustrialization is a problem. Look, I live in Pittsburgh. I know this for sure. The answer is not raising any kind of tax, whether an income tax, a corporate tax, or a trade tax. The answer is to make American manufacturing competitive so that it doesn't need protection, and that's deregulation, tax cuts, stable dollar. So I think in general, markets are trading up on the expectation of a Trump win. The futures market is showing last night he even picked up a few more percentage points, and he was already three times ahead of Biden. Or Harris, for that matter. He's beating equal probability of beating each of them, and it's a high probability. I think markets are taking that into account and treating it as though it would be good for the economy. And frankly, I think it would be good for the economy, too.
Yeah, I don't know if you stayed up till midnight last night watching his 1.5-hour speech, but he did mention further tax cuts. He mentioned, of course, deregulation. He also mentioned paying down the national debt. Anything new that came out of that for you?
Yeah, that was a more growth-oriented and a less, class war-oriented approach. It's almost like J.D. Vance, who I really like personally a lot, have a very high opinion of him, fellow Christian, smart person. He did a little bit of the class war thing, you know, the night before, whereas the president was last night was very unifying, which I was so grateful for. You know, I mean, I hope we've all been praying for Donald Trump. I know I have. And I think a lot of us have prayed for him to be a better leader and a better man. So I would challenge the Never Trumpers, if you've prayed for him, is it possible that God answered that prayer? Is it possible that what happened here in Western Pennsylvania last week maybe made him a more unifying figure, maybe changed him in some way? I'm very much open to that possibility. But from a from the standpoint of the speech, it was unifying and it was pro-growth. Look, if there is a gap between rich and poor, and really a gap between rich and middle class, that's a real thing and it's a problem. But there have always been two different answers to it. One is to pull the rich down. The other is to pull the rich up. Those, the difference between those two solutions to that problem is the difference between night and day, between hell on earth as you had in the Soviet Union or the United States, which is one of the closest things we've ever had to paradise on earth in human history. What I felt like the president was saying last night was not we're going to pull down the rich, but we're going to invite everybody into wealth. And that is, to me, the perfect message. I was really pleased to see that.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jerry. All right, let's finish today with just a quick update. Last week, you and I talked about the work you were doing and sending some letters and communicating with John Deere. You and I texted early in the week as I saw the press release come out that they were going to get away from social and cultural awareness parades and get back to the core business of building tractors, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and you have their employee resource groups be about professional advancement rather than identity politics. I mean, those are some real steps in the right direction. Tractor Supply moved very strongly in the right direction. John Deere has not been as bold. And I think that the ideology maybe is a little deeper in there. So I think, you know, we're going to be meeting we're going to be meeting with Tractor Supply. We're corresponding with them. So in that case, I think it's like, hey, you've done the right thing. You're getting back to business. You're not alienating your customer base. Keep up the good work. I think with John Deere, it's you need to go a little further here. Why do we have a Pride employee resource group but not a Christian employee resource group? We ought to be asking that for every company that's true for, and that's true for a lot of companies. But there's definitely been a move in the right direction. And here's the formula. If you've got a company with a conservative customer base like Tractor Supply or John Deere, or maybe Stanley Black & Decker would be another one that I've been researching recently. But you have corporate policies which are very much leaning into one side of the culture war. Policies that are training people to turn in their fellow workers if they hear the fellow worker say something like, well, so-and-so used to be a man, and now she's in the ladies' room, and I'm uncomfortable about that. This was actually training. Part of the corporate training. What do you do? Well, what you do is report that person to HR. I mean, that's unbelievable. Or, you know, telling your executives they need to go through a training program that helps them detect the traces of racism in their two-year-old so we can put them through the anti-racist baby curriculum. I'm not making this up. This is for real.
Wow.
We're talking, you know, agricultural companies. This isn't Ben and Jerry's. They've just gotten so completely out of kilter with their base. Those are the ones that seem to be responsive when all this stuff is finally revealed. So that's a formula that we've seen working. So far, you know, thanks be to God, and I hope it continues in that direction.
Interesting. All right, Jerry. Well, we covered a lot of ground there. Great work, and thanks for your updates today. Have a great weekend.
Same to you.
All right, that's Jerry Boyer. He's our resident economist, checks in with us each Friday on the markets and corporate engagement and whatever else we're chatting about each week. Boy, we have a lot of folks waiting to get on the air today, and I apologize we didn't get to those questions. Let's do this. Any of you that would like to get on the broadcast next week, we'd love to try to get that scheduled. So feel free to stay right there, and we'll see if we can and get a few of those scheduled to be first up on the broadcast next week. Thanks for your call today. Folks, we so appreciate you being along with us each day, and we look forward to taking your questions and hearing your stories and being invited into your stewardship journey. It's our privilege to come alongside you. I couldn't do this without an amazing team behind me each day, certainly contributing to today's broadcast. Mr. Devin Patrick, our producer, handling our phone calls today. Pat Montague, we're so thankful for Pat, and also Mr. Jim Henry on research, plus the entire cast and crew here at FaithFi. It's an amazing group of men and women committed to equipping you as wise stewards of God's resources. If you want to check out our work, you can learn more at faithfi.com, where you can give and download the app and check out some great content as well. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.